The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
I'm realizing we're doing something again. We're putting our Bears angst evil on maybe the best quarterback prospect that the city has ever had. Is this right? And should we think otherwise?
It's in all of us, okay? If you've been around the city of Chicago for a certain amount of time, it is justified trauma.
I went back and I read scouting reports on Caleb Williams.
Smart.
Going back and saying, all right, there are superlatives, absolute superlatives being used for this guy. And I'll say this to the 815 texter. You're 100% right when you say, Dan, relax. It's game one of his rookie year against one of the best defensive interiors in the league. Is it this season when they can say, we're going to be more likely to win when we ask him to do more, not less? And that's what I don't know. And I don't think they know either.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Serious and turgid, whoever that guy was. It was like all portentous.
He was a man trying to make points.
Yeah, it sounded like somebody impersonating me when I'm trying to be all portentous. That was, did it really sound like that? Okay.
I mean,
it's just football, man. Chill out. It's just the Bears.
The
it's,
things we
it's
tell
not
ourselves.
Worth it. It's seriously not worth it. That's hysterical. That is Marshall Harris, and he is sitting in today on the Bernstein and Holmes Show. We broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we are teaming up with Circa Sports Illinois to celebrate the start of football season. We are live from the Lake Street Plaza at Pru. We got food trucks, we got games, we got more throughout the day. And starting at 1 o'clock, Circa Sports Illinois is going to have merch for customers to download the app and deposit. I got the merch I want. Like, this thing's perfect.
It's a stress ball, right? Basically.
It's a football stress ball, but it's one of these things that sometimes you pick up something and it has to be thrown.
Yes. We had those in the office, like in every television station I've ever worked. Friday night football, like high school football stuff. You give those out to the kids, and then we'd have a bunch of them in our office, and you just playing dodgeball with those things.
Oh, I hope so.
And so
over cubicles and stuff,
yeah,
and stand up just whipping them at people.
They're not hard enough to break anything. So even if it hits something of value, it's probably going
to
be okay.
You know, it happened to me. I was in the store the other day, and I wasn't where I usually am in the store, which is by the day-old baked goods and the discount meat, because that's where people know where I am. I'm always there. But they have now small avocados. 99 cents. Because you know how you buy these giant jumbo avocados, and you're like, all right, well, I'm going to use a couple slices of it, and then it's going to sit, and this part's going to get brown, and I'm going to put it in the thing, and you do a Ziploc bag, whatever it is. It's one of my favorite turns of events, a 99-cent small avocado, use the whole thing. But the moment I picked it up, I thought, oh, is this begging to be thrown at something?
Stop. Stop. No, it's begging to be eaten all in one setting.
Well, I mean, I ended up eating it, but okay. I was balancing desire to throw with desire to eat. Does that make any sense whatsoever?
No, it makes sense.
Am I a complete crazy?
Because of the inner child in us, anytime we pick up anything that we are strong enough to throw, we're going to be like, hey, wonder where I could throw this thing. I wonder if I could hit this from there.
Yeah, no matter what it is.
Wait a second here.
Could I? Yeah, I don't know. Or we stand here all day and we play six sips to a beer, and then we negotiate how many sips you would bet and what odds you would give and the number of tries it would take the other person to throw this at something.
Okay, yeah. I'm not as familiar with that particular game.
Because you obviously didn't spend enough time around white people in college.
That's fair.
Drinking game culture, it's a thing. I almost got in trouble when I told people what Edward Forty Hands was.
Oh, I know about Edward Forty Hands. I do know about that.
You do?
Yeah, yeah. But
because that's some of the dumbest stuff of all time.
Like Edward Forty Hands, beer pong, all the basics. I'm just not familiar with that particular
one. We made anything into a drinking game. If two people were sitting with a beer, it's like, all right, I'll bet you half a beer in three tries you can't take this dart off the dartboard and throw it across the hall and hit that guy's poster.
This is how you spent your college time?
Kinda. Are you judging me?
I was just busy, man. I
was busy too, but you know, when you get your work done, then what are you going to do?
The work was never done.
Oh, see?
I, I, I get it, but at the same time, the work was never done.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. As I mentioned, I should mention everybody we have here. We have a whole team of people here. We have our engineer, Tito. Rich Wyatt is on the case. Ray Diaz is here. Ryan Porth is... Hey, it's Ryan Porth. Ryan's here. Kevin Lapka is here as well. And the entire SCORE promotion staff is helping out. We have Adam Studzinski on the board. Brandon Fryer helping out. And, yeah, we're on Twitch. Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The SCORE with a camera set up right here. And we got a lot to discuss because I think Caleb Williams is acutely aware of the stage he's going to be on Sunday night.
How can you not be? It's Sunday night football. Like, here's the beauty of these younger players especially. We kind of have a warped sense of this is not the way it's always been or whatever. But think about it. Since they've been growing up and following football, Sunday night football has been as marquee or more marquee than Monday night football. Like, growing up, Monday night football was bigger than Sunday night football. That's, in my opinion, no longer the case. But to these athletes who are of a certain age or not of a certain age, I guess I should say, they're acutely aware, as you said, that Sunday night football is as big as it gets, especially because it's week two. We don't know the playoff scenarios and everything else that kind of dictates what we're paying attention to late in the season. Early in the season, it's just like, what is this matchup and what's the juice for this matchup? Whether it's the Thursday night football matchup between the Dolphins and the Bills or the Sunday night matchup, which is C.J. Stroud against Caleb Williams. And, of course, the comparison's so direct because it's like, hey, you were the best rookie quarterback last season. This is allegedly the best rookie quarterback this season, going head-to-head on two teams hoping to do big things. For the Texans, it's go further in the playoffs than they did last season, which they had as successful a season as you could have under a rookie head coach in D'Amico Ryans. For the Bears, it's year three. It's finally time to go with a new offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron, but also Caleb Williams with all his weapons that we thought he might have, but he might not have.
Why did you pause?
Because it's looking real secondhand storage right now midweek here as we gear up for this game on Sunday night. And part of me is like, well, at least it's Sunday night football, so maybe you have more time to get these guys healthy because it's not like they got to be ready Sunday morning. They got to be ready Sunday night.
Secondhand storage as in at currently the skill positions?
Yes. So
Raspberry Beret secondhand store?
Well, here's what I'm saying. I look at that offense that we've been talking about all offseason long. Dan, remind yourself, because I know sometimes remembering joy is not maybe your strongest forte. Remind yourself of the excitement of draft night in the NFL. And when Rome Odunze falls to the Bears, Michael Penix, what? Okay, yeah, you guys be good with that, Atlanta Falcons. And you're thinking all the possibilities of what the Bears offense could be. Just the potential alone has you almost salivating.
You don't think he's going to play, do you?
I would be surprised.
Yeah, me too.
I would be surprised. So if Odunze doesn't play and Keenan Allen doesn't play, everything that you hoped and wished for and were really dreaming about becomes something very different on Sunday night against a very good Texans defense.
And we heard Matt Eberflus yesterday asked about C.J. Stroud. Now, this is, I think, and a lot of football people believe C.J. Stroud is an outlier. I know Lawrence has said this too. It is unfair to compare anybody to C.J. Stroud for him to show that kind of rapid development and evolution over the course of a single season to accelerate at that level. And maybe it's true, but I would hope that Caleb Williams wants to be held to that standard, that if he's going to say the things he has said, I don't just want to come into this league, I want to rewrite history. Well, anytime you want to get started with that, I would love for the team to allow him to do it as he feels comfortable doing that. Matt Eberflus was asked specifically, and we played this, the whole press conference yesterday, and both Mark Grody and I took notes, and he as a seasoned Bears reporter, and I saw him make a note and write this down when Matt Eberflus was asked why C.J. Stroud has been able to become what he's become.
It was coached well. You know, I think he was coached well to stay in the pocket. I think that he naturally keeps his eyes down the field and doesn't look at rush, which happens to a lot of young quarterbacks. So he's able to do that. Like I said, he had a lot of good skill around him. You know, Tank did a heck of a job when he was in there before he got injured. And then Collins is obviously one of the most explosive, you know, best receivers in the league. You know, so, just about that.
I wrote it down too. Coached well to stay in the pocket. That's very specific. He was coached well to stay in the pocket. Do you think that betrayed a desire that he and Shane Waldron have? I'm not sure.
I don't think so, because I think if we talk about Caleb Williams in that respect, while fundamentally it sounds great, and that's what you want all quarterbacks to do because pocket passer is a thing, understanding what makes Caleb Williams special is the fact that he can get outside the pocket, and that's where he can cause even more problems for a defense. I like both things. Yes, you should be able to operate in the pocket. That's the goal, right? But to be fair, Matt Eberflus hasn't had an offensive line that's allowed any quarterback in his tenure here to be able to do so. So I think Caleb Williams' superpower of being able to operate on the fly, throw on the run, moving from side to side, is something that they have to not necessarily lean into, but be aware of and kind of make a lane for. It's a separate lane.
I also want to confirm, I believe he said he didn't say he doesn't look at the rush. He said he doesn't look at Rush. So if, I don't know if he's allowed. Is he allowed to listen to Rush?
Rush the band? Rush
yeah.
Limbaugh?
Yeah. No, like, no. I think and not R.I.P. No, depends what that stands for. But no, Rush Limbaugh, not. No, he doesn't deserve to rest in peace at all. I hope he's burning in hell and being sodomized by demons. But if he says he doesn't look at Rush, because, I mean, they're not exactly handsome men.
Right.
I understand that. I mean, you don't want to look. There it is.
Oh, there it is.
Well, he's been coached well, right? He's been coached well to stay in the pocket, and he doesn't listen to Rush.
Listen, here's what I'll say about that. The Rush thing, I thought that was an important part of the statement that he was making, because it's like, you could stay in the pocket as long as you're not adversely affected by all the chaos that's happening around you, right? If you're worried about that, you can't focus on your job to go through your progressions to get rid of the ball. So I think those two things go hand in hand. That's why he said that on the back end of that statement.
I think so, too. I do think that he is, in that statement, expressing where he sees where they project Caleb to be. They project him to be comfortable, diagnostic, visual, and seeing past all the traffic. But when we've talked to quarterback experts and they talk about a dirty pocket, a messy pocket, it's as much about the feet as it is the eyes. And I think Caleb's terrific at re-squaring his shoulders, resetting his platform, keeping his eyes down the field. But I don't want him to have to show off all of these skills yet.
He's a rookie. No, it's game two. No,
keep his feet clean first, and then let him deal with his eyes. It's very hard to be looking down here, where's he, when there are big, angry men pulling at your ankles.
Yeah, and the amount of internal pressure, like on the inside of the line that came at him last week, I want to say I don't expect that to happen, but I can't say that with a straight face, because I understand the limitations and the problems and the inconsistency that the Bears offensive line has had. If you go from middle building out, the problems start seemingly with the center and guard positions. So I'm as interested to see the offensive line play this week as it portends to the run game, the passing game, whatever, as I am to see Caleb Williams himself and what he does. They are interwoven. They're connected. But I think keeping him healthy, number one, that's number one, keeping him healthy. Because when I watched last week's game,
keep anybody healthy. Well,
that's what I'm saying.
We always say that. But there's no –
But you can reduce the odds of harm. You can reduce the odds of harm.
I guess. I mean, look, Roma Dunze sprained his MCL.
Yeah, yeah.
It got rolled up on. He didn't see people coming.
Absolutely.
Obviously, there's avoidable issues and there's unavoidable issues. I mean, look, the Teddy Bridgewater injury, you know, the guy just plants his foot and his
knee
explodes.
Want your quarterback to become a pinata, is all I'm
saying. Oh, no. Especially, usually highly drafted rookie quarterbacks are. But there's no excuse for it to be on this team that they could have conceivably allotted more resources in that regard.
Dan,
right?
What you saw from that rookie quarterback, Caleb Williams, knowing what you know about the person he replaced and how he fared in his Steelers debut, how many sacks would Justin Fields have taken last week?
A lot.
And that's my point.
And maybe would have fumbled on a couple of them because of his inability to protect the ball.
And the most important stat for me, watching Caleb Williams not perform to the legend that he wanted to. Saying.
Zero turnovers.
Zero turnovers. At the end of the day, you didn't turn the ball over. And that's why you won the game.
Yeah, people were, as much as we compared it to the Crown Their Ass game, Rex Grossman was responsible for six turnovers in the Crown Your Ass game, which is, you talk about a bailout. You talk about, it's one thing for Caleb to fall on his sword and be like, yeah, they really picked me up. There will never be another NFL game. And I think statistically it's probably true that there hasn't been and there won't be another NFL game where a quarterback has to go thank his defense to the, and his kick returner and punt returner to that extent.
Yeah, that's because... It's almost impossible. If you didn't see it with your own two eyes, you would not have believed it.
Now, see, I'm looking at it. I see Lapka has one of these stress balls in his hand, and without thinking, just reflexively,
he's going to give a sidearm.
He was getting ready, and it's something. If you're holding one of these, you're constantly resetting your throwing platform. You're keeping your eyes down the field. These will make you a better fundamental quarterback just because you're holding it. And in that, and also thanks to the texter who said every time he buys limes. He wants to throw limes.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. The lime is perfect. The lime is literally the size of that football.
Sometimes, if you shop in a good Mexican grocery store in Chicago, the limes are less expensive and a little bit smaller. The ones in, like, Jewel or Mariano's are usually larger.
Okay.
I like the smaller ones. I would rather, if I'm making a big thing of margaritas...
I was about to ask, what is your primary lime usage? Is it margaritas?
It is. Well, that's an interesting question. My wife likes beer, a Michelada-style Mexican beer.
With the limes.
Where I will what I do is I do a little bit of kosher salt in the bottom, and Ooh. Then I do probably 2 teaspoons of Valentina or Tabasco.
Okay. I'm following you.
Okay. Then half of a small lime, and then kind of use the lime to smush up the Tabasco and the salt. Then I pour in either a Modelo, a Tecate, or a Pacifico. And then I take the second half of the lime, squeeze that in, and just drop that in the top and hand it to her.
Are you a cocktail artist?
I'm not. But I know...
That sounded very artistry. Like,
no, I just... I know...
You know how you like it.
I know she likes it. I don't generally like micheladas.
That sounds like a successful relationship right there.
I like a spicy margarita, but I know exactly. Say, hey, make me a michelada. I can do that, and it always sounds good. We are going to talk more football in just a second because we're going to hear from both D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud talking about Caleb Williams, and we'll continue to talk about every game seems huge now. It really does. Every game seems bigger. Every game seems more important, and because this one is on national TV against these teams, It's good to get this level of Bears excitement while they're undefeated.
Yeah, they're undefeated. Want to know.
Okay. He's Marshall Harris. I'm Dan Bernstein. And you can come say, hey, we're here. We're at Pru. We are at Lake Street Plaza at Pru, a park with an abundance of outdoor seating, a fountain, and beautiful greenery open to the public. So come hang. You got the score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, the score, 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 score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey in Station. Station.
Yeah, I would say the drops. Sometimes I rush my drop a little bit, you know, not needing to. You know, one specific route that that I can think of is Rome when he was, or I think it was a 10-yard route right over the ball. And I rushed my drop and then, you know, tried to juice it in there a little bit and missed. You know, I didn't need to. Just trying to hurry up and get the ball to him, getting his hands fast as possible so he can, you know, make magic and do what he does. And so, just making sure, you know, trusting the drop, trusting the reads and things like that, and getting through them. I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that I'm focused on. And then, you know, my finishes on my play fakes or anything like that.
One thing I really like about Caleb Williams is both his ability to understand what he needs to improve and his willingness to discuss it. And there are a lot of athletes who don't want to and who want to say, well, that's what we'll talk about that. My coaches and I have talked about that, but he lets us in a little bit. And I think it's a great way to develop a relationship with the fans and say, all right, kid, good luck. Figure it out and to let us see what he thinks he needs to work on.
Here's my question on that. Do we believe that that is the modern day media coaching that has helped him get to that point where he can be a little bit more sherry, if you will? Because, you know, these people now that play sports at the high school level, especially at the college level, they get so much media training that did not exist, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
I think that's part of it. I think the other aspect is, and I maybe football is becoming a little bit more like basketball, in that one of the reasons I love basketball and I love basketball commentary is everything's right in front of you. And if a guy dribbles a ball off his foot, if a guy dribbles into traffic, if a guy takes a three when you need it to, so much of basketball isn't arcane and doesn't get subsumed under an avalanche of jargon. And basketball, where a coach will say, we didn't rebound. Or a coach will say, we're not defending anybody. Our defense stinks. And I love that about it. And I also think there's an aspect in golf that's similar, where everybody sees everything. Everyone knows what goes wrong. That's a bad shot. That's a bad club selection. I think quarterbacking, as complicated as it is, that he has been raised by quarterbacks coaches forever. And I think more so, and we get a lot of it in what we do,
right.
We have access to the quarterbacking industrial complex now in a way that whether he says it or not, Tim Jenkins or Kurt Warner.
Right. There's enough former quarterbacks who are talking
Rosenfels
the talk and letting us in.
JT O'Sullivan or Dan Orlovsky is going to have that clicker and he's going to say he rushed his drop. So,
and it's not like you necessarily have to go to legacy media to find the stuff out now. You could just go on social media, somebody's YouTube page, and they can cleanly explain to you what happened, why it happened,
yes,
how it happened, and what needs to happen differently so that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
I completely understand that. Because you're right. In basketball, it's so, like, as you said in front of you, we all play or have watched enough basketball to understand, hey, you can't make that pass in that situation. Why did you throw it into the post that way as opposed to a bounce pass, a lob, whatever? It's very simplistic. With quarterbacking, with football in general, there's so much going on over the course of one play with 11 guys on one side and 11 guys on one side doing different things to make the play work or to blow the play up. But quarterbacking is like one position, and then you can kind of take the what's going on right next to it and what might affect that. But you're right. We're getting more insight into quarterbacking than we've ever gotten,
and
ever.
Don't get me wrong. It remains complicated.
Oh, yeah, it's complicated.
And part of it is this industry needs it to be complicated, so some of these coaches have value. When you're talking about, you know, your back leg is here and your first hitch is here and you are reading the X receiver here before you pivot this way and look the safety over to this zone or that zone. So it is complicated, but for a rookie quarterback to feel confident enough to say, I rushed some of my drops, and it made me try to juice a ball in there that I wouldn't otherwise throw, because he knows someone else might notice that. And maybe that'll be coached out of it. I hope it's not. I hope they let him be that guy and live that life, because I think it's great. I think it really does help keep fans on your side when people get to watch you grow and just root for you to get past some of these mistakes.
Transparency is very tricky and nuanced in any sport, but authenticity, that shines through regardless. Everyone loves something authentic, whether they love you or hate you. If they're authentic, they're going to give you way more grace in both the mistakes that you make and when you don't bring it on a particular Sunday.
That's Marshall Harris. I'm Dan Bernstein here on the Bernstein & Holmes Show, this segment of which is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. So this is the time of the week where opposing teams say nice things about opposing teams, and it's the first time some opponents have gotten the opportunity at the NFL level to talk about Caleb Williams. Here is what Texans coach DeMeco Ryans had to say.
Bears, what I see offensively is starting with the quarterback, with Caleb, exciting player to watch. Strong arm, like the guy can move around the pocket, scramble in and throw. Like you have to stay on your coverage, right? Because he's going to find someone downfield. So it's we have to be on the details there when it comes to him moving around in the pocket and just their running game. I think that's where everything starts. They do a good job of their zone scheme, right? Getting Swift going on the outside. We have to do a great job in the run game. And then they have playmakers on the outside. Keenan Allen, all right, DJ Moore, two big-time playmakers who've done it for a while in this league. Guys, we have to be aware of where they are in all situations, and we have to make sure we're as sticky as possible in coverage versus them.
Pretty standard stuff, and I hope Keenan Allen's okay because he didn't practice yesterday with this ongoing heel injury. I don't really like the way they've talked about it.
It's because they tried to soften the blow by saying, you know, it's something he's dealing with. He's, you know, going to be – but we're now in the regular season.
They said it was a cleat issue, remember?
Yeah, but –
it's a heel injury.
The way the cleat affects his heel. How about that?
It's a heel injury. His heel hurts, and he wears cleats for a living.
And so, obviously, there's so many different things you can put inside of a cleat to alleviate some of that. But once your pain is beyond that, that's problematic. And it doesn't sound like something that's going to be week to week. It sounds like, to me, it sounds like something where he's going to need to either rest it or do something. Like, being on it is going to aggravate it. And you might feel good enough to go, if you will. But if you're not at top flight fully healed, it's a bad time in the season to be dealing with week-to-week stuff or day-to-day stuff.
Because it's the beginning of the 32-year-old wideout.
It's the beginning of the season. If this was week 15, we'd probably all feel a bit different about it. But I think most of us are saying, hey, get him right and then get him back on the field, not try to navigate your way through a gimpy player.
Well, I don't know that that's how they think of it, because usually with veterans who say, I'm good, when the game
they
starts,
trust the veteran.
I'm good. We talked to Jim Miller about it, the former Bears quarterback who played with the Seattle Seahawks, and he brought up John L. Williams. And he said John L. Williams would look old in practice all week. And then the moment the lights went out of the game started, he was himself. And that's great. And that works for a while, and you probably remember that because it stands out as an outlier. And the truth is, the history of 32-year-old wide receivers is not great. And that is often the defining age when you start to not be what you were. And that's, what, 23 million? Is that the number for Keenan Allen?
It's a big number.
Okay.
It's not a small number.
No, I think it's that. And there's value to having the vet with the experience of what it does for a young quarterback. But
and it's a contract year too. So if he's trying to get more money, he's going to try to play through it. But if you're ineffective or you actually get hurt, like if you limp off the field during a game, that's a different thing than, oh, he looks old in practice. He had to leave the game.
C.J. Stroud was also asked what he thinks of the Bears and his counterpart going into this game.
I really didn't get to watch much of him. I just watched the defense, but he's definitely a playmaker, somebody who can extend plays and, you know, make all the cool throws. A tough player, take hits, and really, really talented. So, you know, I definitely do think that he has great things coming in his career. And I definitely do think, like, he'll get his rhythm going. And, you know, it takes time. It's not something that doesn't happen overnight. You can see in every quarterback this week, I think, except for probably Baker Mayfield, who looked really good. Everybody's kind of rusty, trying to just, you know, get those kinks out and get that rust away. And I think quarterback players start picking up week two, week three, week four, just like every year. So I definitely think he'll get his rhythm.
Now, that's interesting because Caleb mentioned the same thing. And again, this is another case where there's no secrets. Quarterbacking was bad for the most part around the league. And everybody's sort of saying, well, maybe it's getting the kinks out. The larger question is, are defenses just better? Are defenses more ready now for some of what's coming?
I think it's a combination. Defenses are ready, first of all. But also, you know, preseason's shorter than it used to be. And people are not trying to play in the preseason. Teams, front offices, coaches, they're not trying to play their players in the preseason that they don't feel like need to prove something. If you know what you have, you'll go in with a little rust in week one as opposed to risking, I guess, injury in the preseason. It's interesting to me because when you say our defense is better, I can tell you one thing. The individuals on the defenses, faster, stronger than they've ever been before. Better technique than they've ever been before. Coached up as well as they have been in the history of the game. it's the evolution of the game, right? You know, offense takes a little bit of a – I mean, there's a reason it's a passing league now instead of a running league. There's a reason you can't touch the quarterback anymore. I think the answer to your question is, yes, defenses are better, but I do think quarterback play will improve. It can't be this bad, Dan. Because week one was bad.
We're going to get to a little bit later on in the show because Caleb Williams also had some things to say about that. And I'm not sure how young quarterbacks are being helped in their development by having it explained to them that it's okay for things to be taking time. I don't remember it ever being okay before. I really don't. I don't remember NFL teams like, you don't have to be good yet. It's okay. No one else is good. It's okay.
I mean, some quarterbacks don't even play their rookie season, right? And so, you know, you look at Michael Penix, I guess J.J. McCarthy was going to play, but he's not anymore. So there's always been that two ways of thinking, play now or they should watch. We saw Patrick Mahomes. Worked out pretty well for him not having to play immediately.
Yeah, he's a unicorn.
But he is a unicorn.
I can't use
him. You talked about outliers earlier. Like he's one of one.
But we do know also, look, Bobby Slowick. And it's still weird for me because I was around his father when he was a Bears defensive backs coach. And Bobby did such a good job incorporating familiar Ohio State concepts.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's pure terminology. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't have the plays in front of me and what they're labeled and what the positions are called. But if Shane Waldron would consider saying, hey, Caleb, what do you want to do that Lincoln Riley did? How can I communicate with you in games in a way that Lincoln Riley did? Is there a playbook of developing Stroud from which Waldron could learn from Slowick? I don't know. I wouldn't think there's a downside unless collegiate plays are easier to sniff out. Unless some of these collegiate plays are easier to defend. But we know there's been a commingling where we used to be able to watch pro offense versus college offense because of how quickly information is disseminated, how rather than literally snail mailing film to people, everything is instantly available all the time. You've got junior high-level teams. You've got 7-on-7 teams or whatever it is in Texas now running the same stuff they see the night before on Sunday Night Football.
It's kind of crazy how that works. Everything just flows together now, and there are no barriers, which can be good and bad depending on what we're talking about, to information. Information is everywhere. So I think with the Slowick thing, and the only thing I worry about with Caleb and what you just proposed is maybe too much information too quickly.
Maybe.
That's the only thing, the downside to that.
But I know he's got agency, and he would say, hey, give me this play every once in a while, or call it this. Let me remember it that way and get in my comfort zone a little bit. From everything we know about Shane Waldron not being Luke Getsy, the part of the reason why Getsy's not here and Waldron is because of the expectation of some flexibility.
You just reminded me I watched Luke Getsy's offense in week one.
Did you throw up?
Yeah, I didn't need to throw. You're going up against. No, it wasn't good.
Watching Gardner Minshew operate the Luke Getsy offense isn't your idea of a well spent football afternoon.
It was the game that was on in the late window. I was like, let's just see what happens, and it was predictable.
Before Chicago takes on Houston, tune in Sunday evening from 5:30 to 7:20 after the Cubs game for the local Ford dealers pregame show here on 670 The Score. It's presented by Busey Bank and Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley. They'll get you set for the game. Then, immediately following the game, Mark Grody will join Olin and Manley with instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Wonderverse. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. You know, I was joking before about our fabulous little stress ball footballs here, which are awesome. There's real footballs over there. And there were real people throwing real footballs.
At real targets.
So we're going to have a day here at Prue because Circa Sports Illinois is teaming up with us, The Score, to celebrate the start of football season. Food trucks, these games, and more throughout the day. Circa Sports is going to have merch for you when you come and download the app and deposit. We've got plenty more to come. Let's do a quick check-in with where the fading Chicago Cubs stand after a valiant comeback fell short last night. We got a lot more to come today here on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Matt Bowen.
I was listening to you guys on the radio one afternoon.
You should be. Everybody should.
Breakdown.
The pitch. Swing and a miss. The ball gets away from the catcher, but the throw to first is in time, and the ball game is over. Bush swung at a breaking ball in the dirt. The catcher, Smith, picked it up, threw to first, and the ball game is over. The Dodgers have beaten the Cubs by a score of 10-8.
That was Pat Hughes on the call, on the score late last night. If you stayed up and watched the comeback or sort of kept your eye on it and went back to it when you saw they were creeping back in after the Bellinger homer. And then Michael Kopech started to remind you of what Michael Kopech does, but they just couldn't cash it in.
Yeah, listen, they needed that win so badly.
They need every win. They have one more loss. By my calculation, now you've got one more game you can lose from here on in, and then you're toast.
How many wins did you have them needing to get into
90. I had them needing 90 if both the Mets and the Braves played to their current win percentage. I had them at 89 and getting there fairly easily.
I think my issue was I always said they're going to catch the Braves. I still believe that. But the Mets have taken off, and that's the problem. There was no doubt in my mind they could catch the Braves because the Braves are hurting. They're limping down the stretch. But the Mets, that's a different animal in and of itself. And unless they go into some kind of a slump, it's looking real dicey.
Yeah,
I had them needing 88 wins.
But even the math of catching the Braves is just so hard right now when you're out of games and
they need to rip off like a 9 out of 10.
No, they've got to go 15-1.
I hear you, but like to get
they got to go 9 out of 10 and then win all the rest.
Yeah,
of them.
Yeah. But I'm saying
denying the 9 out of 10. So, it's just what happens after that.
So I think my point was when I say they've got to win 9 out of 10, it's like if they don't win 9 out of 10, we're not even having the conversation anymore.
I'm searching for adjectives
to describe
the feeling of where this Cubs season is right now for me right now, because they've kept us on the cusp of belief here and there, but I've never really gotten back there. It's been too daunting now for about, what are we talking about, 10 weeks?
Yeah.
At least we're like, you know, it's probably over.
Right.
And then when you think about the larger issue, okay, let's say they go 15-1. Let's just say they do that. They get to 90 wins. And then they sneak into these expanded playoffs. Even then, like, where's our World Series standard?
See, this is where I'm going to have to be like the pragmatic optimist.
I believe me, I need one of those.
Okay, so listen.
I may bring you with me after the show.
You have to get in to have a chance, right?
Yes.
And once you get in, what we have learned in recent seasons is you don't have to be the big bad in the playoffs. You can just be a wild card team. Just, hey, you get hot, you're good.
Variance is your friend.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a million ways where this could play out is if you get in, you're good to go.
I understand, and I also understand the marking point of what it means to say playoff team.
In this city right now?
But and even though it doesn't mean what it used to mean to say playoff team.
Yeah, we're
regard.
Not talking about four divisions in baseball and then you play for the NLCS or the ALCS and then you're in the World Series. There's a lot more work to be done.
I'm almost old enough to predate that. Wasn't my birth year the first year of divisions?
Okay. Okay.
Wasn't 68 the last year of the pennant?
I don't know
the
specific year. I just know when I was growing up, it was like the Braves were in the NL West.
Yes.
Like, so that's where my frame of mind comes from. But again, let's just let it play out. Last night was bad, but it's not the first time we've been on the radio saying last night was bad when talking about the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think overall, they won 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. My thing is playing well enough to win enough games to get in the playoffs. I don't know that the other teams are playing poorly enough to let them in the back door.
No, I had them, we did it yesterday with 17 games left. If the Mets and or the Braves went 10-7, the Cubs would have to go 15-2.
Yeah, I could see the Braves going more like 7-10. But the Mets might go 10-7.
Either way, and the Cubs aren't going to go 15-2 already because now they have to go 15-1.
Yeah.
So it's too bad, and you hate to see this slow denouement of a season, even if they have a winning record.
Here's my question: If the season ends like the way you think it's going to end,
yes,
is this season worse than last season? Yeah, exactly. It's hard.
Yeah, it's. I paused before I answered that because last year hurt more because they had a 93% chance of making the playoffs by the Fangraphs odds
before they just let it slip
that,
away.
That collapse was brutal.
It was brutal to watch because it's like signature moments within the collapse.
I think, in my opinion, Marshall, this year is worse because although that collapse last year was terrible, at least the timing was better. Like, this is way too little too late to where now it doesn't even matter. As you say, 15-1, Dan, like, okay, like, probably not going to happen. At least last year the timing was better and they gave you some hope where you thought, okay, like, there's at least a push here, and they didn't sell off at the deadline, which they didn't do again, but you know what I'm saying.
But the fact that we're debating what feels worse
right.
means something has been screwed up for a team that's got all the money and all the fans and every revenue stream and their own network.
And their manager that they hand-selected.
And a hand-picked manager, yep.
They're like, if we could have anyone, this is the guy we want. And unfortunately, unlike his time in Milwaukee, he doesn't seem to have gotten the most out of this team this year.
I don't think so. I think that's fair. And we can talk about injuries all we want, but that's just true. It's an awkward time to try to force yourself to pretend that they're doing better and therefore they're still in it. And that's the thing about because baseball has 162 games and
all these playoff spots now
and all these playoff spots now to keep our short attention, our sports attention spans interested. It's a reminder every time, like, oh, should I care? Wait, should I look at the score? Does the score matter to me? And we're constantly making those decisions. And the answer is probably like, not really. Sorry.
I don't know, man. It's sad is what it is. And you hope for better things, but I don't see anything better coming anytime soon for either of these baseball teams.
I see good things coming anytime soon and soon for this particular radio program because we're going to talk some more football, more about Caleb Williams and what he is saying about and how he's cloaking himself in the larger state of quarterbacking. Because like we heard, I think we're going to also replay the stuff that Stroud said too because I found that really interesting. Paul Charchian at 11:25 is going to set up your fantasy team. We got Matt Bowen at noon. We got Bucky Brooks at 1:25. And we got things for you. What a lovely al fresco day. This is as we sit here at Pru on the plaza at Lake Street, thanks to our friends at Pru and Circa Sports Illinois. There's going to be food trucks showing up. There's footballs thrown around. And if you walk by, maybe you can just grab one of these stress balls and throw it at something or someone. Safely, of course. We would never want you to hurt anyone. You know, when we're on remote, when we've done the auto show before, and we had these little baseballs like these, I wouldn't do this because it's a prolate spheroid that will bounce randomly. But when we had an actual spheroid, my thing was seeing kids, especially toddlers, and if their parents didn't see, I would flick one of the stress balls, like catch the eye of the kid, flick the ball out at the kid and like, go get it. And see, the parent would look around, where'd my kid go? And I would,
you're causing undue stress.
No,
is what you're
but
doing.
Undue stress ball. But I would just make sure that we're letting no toddler go ungifted with one of these lovely score items. So I promise you this, if you want to bring your kid by, I'll make sure.
We have enough.
Your kid gets a toy, and your kid will immediately throw it somewhere, and you'll be chasing it down. So that's going to happen. More football talk when we return. Marshall Harris, Dan Bernstein, Bernstein and Holmes Show on The Score.